Good morning, members. The Select Committee on Health Innovation will come to order. Judeline, please call the roll.
Chair Tuck.
Here.
Representatives Alvarez, excuse, Andrade.
Here.
Borrero.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Chamberlain.
Here.
Gonzalez Pittman.
Present.
Lopez J.
Here.
Lopez V.
Here.
Rayner, excused. Rizzo, excused. Silvers, excused. Steele, excused. Tremont.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. As we begin the meeting, I ask that we silence our cell phones, pagers, computers, whatever you may have. And members, we have two bills on the agenda today. We're going to start off with HB 1549 by Representative Grant.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, members. 9 o'clock on a Friday morning, and everybody would probably be on their way home if they could be, other than this committee. I know my Senate counterpart got criticized yesterday for a long introduction and explanation of this bill, so I'm going to hit the highlights. It's 315 pages long, as you know, and the draft analysis, the summary analysis, is 120 pages long, so I know that there's a lot of material here. My door is open to anybody after this meeting. If you have questions on the bill or if you have concerns about the bill, please come to my office. I know I've reached out to all of you prior to the bill, and everybody seemed like they were pretty happy. Representative Skidmore, thank you for coming by yesterday. So let's get started. So HB 1549 is a robust package of policy initiatives and strategic investments that will help make sure Florida's healthcare workforce is growing and innovating at the same pace as the rest of our great state. As we all know, Florida's attracting families, businesses, and seniors. And over the next 5 years, our population will grow by almost 300,000 residents per year. With all this growth, we'll need more maternity rooms to welcome new Floridians to our family. We will need more services for seniors to live out their lives in dignity and safety. And we'll need more primary care providers who play a vital role as the main point of contact in the healthcare system for families and seniors. This bill is a comprehensive package of initiatives with four main goals. First, to grow Florida's healthcare workforce through new opportunities for education, training, and retention. To remove regulatory barriers to increase workforce availability and mobility, and to increase access, efficiency, and quality of healthcare, and finally, to increase affordability and empower patients in the healthcare cost decisions that will impact them. So I'm going to go over specific examples of what this bill will do. It is by no means comprehensive, but just to give you an overview of some of the positive things that this bill will do. In terms of growing Florida's healthcare workforce, this bill will expand residencies through the Slots for Doctors program with 700 new residency programs for medical students to go into residencies. It will also additionally prohibit hospitals from taking money from medical schools related to students to obtain clinical hours that they need to become physicians. It creates a new pathway for experienced foreign physicians to be exempted from the current residency requirements as they complete a clinical program comparable to those of a similarly accredited school in the United States. And it removes statutory barriers and limits of Florida's medical schools hiring experienced foreign trained physicians for their facilities. It expands dental school loan repayment programs to include dental hygienists, private dental practices in underserved areas as long as the practice serves Medicaid patients. In terms of removing regulations to increase workforce mobility, it removes barriers to practitioners licensed in other states to practice in the state of Florida. The bill removes barriers to licensure by authorizing licensure by endorsement for all healthcare practitioners and standardizing those requirements. It authorizes the Board of Medicine, Osteopathic Medicine, and the Boards of Nursing to issue temporary certificates to PAs and APRNs to practice in areas of critical need in the state. It establishes limited licensure, and this is a new program for graduate assistant physicians. Currently, in the United States, there are about 300 medical school graduates every year who are unable to find a residency program. We are going to license those individuals for a period of up to 2 years to come practice under the supervision of a physician in the state of Florida. We are reducing regulations for autonomous nurse and midwives. All we are doing basically is saying that they don't need a transfer agreement, which they are unable to get at this point. It will not change the standard of care. It expands telehealth for minority maternity care patients. We had previously passed a bill, I think in 2020 or 2021, for two counties with this program. We expanded it last year to 18 counties. Now we're expanding this program statewide. The program has been very successful in helping mothers with maternal mortality and morbidity, and we want to expand that program as it will improve patient care. It reduces barriers for psychologists and psychiatric nurses to work in Baker Act facilities. In terms of expanding access to quality and efficient health care, it increases the eligibility threshold to allow more low-income Floridians to access care at these clinics from 200% of the federal poverty to 300% of the federal poverty level. It creates advanced birth centers, which will, for non-critical or non-complicated pregnancies, be an alternate site of care for people to have babies. It expands mobile response teams. A recent review of the response team data shows that 82% of mobile response team engagement resulted in community stabilization rather than an involuntary admission. I have personal experience with this. Some friends of mine went through this program in Charlotte County, and it is very successful. So that will be something that the state will pay, and everybody will be able to have access to that. In terms of increasing affordability and empowering patients, the bill adopts and enforces federal standards for hospital estimates, personal estimates for insurance cost sharing, estimates and publication of facility charges, and protects providers who communicate cash price patients. It also puts limits on medical debt. And in conclusion, the bill adds or is going to cost at this point $580 million. That is the House version of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grant. And members, please let the record reflect that we do have Representative Skidmore as ex officio today. So welcome to the committee. And with that, members, we are in questions. Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Leader Grant, for spending some time with me yesterday.
It was my pleasure.
And it is, this bill is, got a lot of really great things in it. A couple things that I just want to ask a question about. Overall, we are one of only 10 states that has not expanded Medicaid. Was that part of the consideration of doing even more than what you've started here with this this very good bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No, that was, that would have to be a separate bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regard to the advanced birthing centers, that's new to me. Is that something that other states have adopted? And could you just tell me a little bit about how that would work?
Sure. First of all, the advanced birthing centers, just so you know, would have to be licensed by ACA and take Medicaid. So it is an alternative to hospital births. Hopefully less expensive, and because there is such, you know, a dearth of facilities in some of the rural areas and underserved areas, this is an alternative for those people who need, or those women who need to have a birth that is uncomplicated, that they could go there and have this performed. And I'm not sure what other states are doing with in this.
Okay, thank you.
Hello?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then the one concern that I have is the elimination of the residency requirement for foreign physicians. I know there's probably a lot of give and take in here, but do you know what if other states have adopted that policy and how that, if there have been any problems with it?
I do not know what other states have done. I asked staff that question yesterday about what has the experience been here in Florida with foreign doctors. And before I answer your question fully, just please know that my personal physician was trained in India, and he was referred to me by the president of Millennium Healthcare Services, which they have 1,000 doctors that they employ. And my physician is the same physician that he uses, the president of that, because he could choose anybody he wanted. And his father, who is also a physician, uses the same doctor. So I have personally no concerns about foreign-trained doctors, you know, treating patients in Florida. To my knowledge, and we haven't got the statistics yet, to see if there is a great disparity between adverse outcomes from foreign-trained doctors and you know, U.S.-trained doctors. As soon as we get that information, I'll share it with you. It's not a concern that I have based on my experience or I think DOH's experience.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. And certainly I agree, foreign-trained physicians, my concern is just the residency piece. They would no longer have to do that. So at this point in time, your physician did take a residency, a residency, because that is the law. So that's where I have a little bit of heartburn and would love to know if there are any statistics about adverse outcomes from.
As soon as we get those, I'll share them with you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ranking Member Costello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Leader Grant. I think that my colleague, Representative Skidmore, asked the question that I had a concern about. Having medical people in my family, the residency was a big thing, part of their education. And that was going to be my question, the checks and balances that we're going to have on this program. And I think you answered it pretty eloquently. So I'm good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So no question?
That's it.
Understood.
Thanks for your comments.
Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. When you spoke about the transfer agreement and also workforce, right now we have a lot of people that's out of work here in Florida. Will Floridians get the top priority or first priority to actually be employed before we reach across the state lines?
Thank you, Chair. I know we had discussed this before. There is such a shortage of healthcare workers in the state of Florida right now, nationally for that matter, but particularly in the state of Florida. I don't see that as being an issue. If I was a hospital or a clinic or an ambulance service and I had a shortage of staff, and all of them do, I would say that I'm going to try to hire the most qualified individual I can. If there is, and this is an example, a nurse from California who has 10 years experience, who wants to come to the state of Florida, and the hospital is trying to determine between the California nurse and a nurse that just graduated from a Florida institution, I would think in terms of patient care, in terms of training, they would probably want to go with the more experienced nurse. So to say we should give priority just because you're a Florida resident or because you went to school here, I think patient care is more important than that.
Follow up.
You're absolutely right, but if we're talking about spending Floridian money here, I think we should try to keep the money in Florida. When we are actually making these advancements or putting buildings.
Rep, is there a question in here?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Getting there. Making the advancement and putting bills together, is it any way possible that we can add something into the bill to make that possible?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. Let me think about that. I have some problems with telling an employer who they can or cannot hire. Based on where somebody was trained or what their former state of residence was. So let's talk about that after, if you don't mind.
Follow up?
Another question?
Follow up.
Thank you. You spoke about the mortality of birth rates in low-income areas. The facilities that you're talking about where the 200% to 300% has been, are we having additional training or additional staffing that would be able to facilitate those locations?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. If you're talking about advanced birth centers, or are you talking about clinics?
Both.
Okay, well, there are two. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. Explanation. the free clinics or the are the poverty level is going from 200 to 300, so that will give more people, you know, access to get treatment at that clinic. The advanced birthing centers have not been established, have not been licensed in the state yet. We don't know what's going to happen with them, how popular they are going to be. I'm guessing it's going to depend somewhat on insurance rates and Medicaid rates of payment for those facilities to see how well they get established. They will have, by law, if this passes, they will be required to have an obstetrician and anesthesiologist on staff to treat patients. So I'm not concerned about the quality of care that occurs there. I just don't know how successful they're going to be in the marketplace of healthcare. It's new.
Follow up? Additional questions, members? All right, seeing none, there are no amendments, and we'll move on to public testimony. First up, we have Alan, I'm so sorry. Abramowitz with the ARC of Florida. Thank you for being here. You're recognized.
May it please the chair. And Chair Tuck, thank you for your support for the Arc Ridge and other persons with disabilities around the state. We appreciate it. My name is Alan Abramowitz. I'm the CEO of the Arc of Florida, and we represent providers from around the state, from Pensacola to Miami-Dade, and whose boards are made up of families with persons with disabilities and self-advocates. And the first thing I want to say is thank Leader Grant for a great bill. This is a great opportunity. The ARC of Florida and Florida Association of Rehabilitative Facilities did a survey recently, and in the survey showed that 38% of our providers reduced services last year, and we know that there's a lack of services. There's a provision, although we like all parts, the dental, all parts of the law, we especially appreciate the rate increase for persons with disabilities. And, you know, I know that there's other bills trying to take people off the wait list. There's going to need to be a lot more services, and the rate increase allows providers to expand their services and meet the needs. Appreciate you talking to me earlier today, Representative Grant, and thank you for this bill. Not only will it improve services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, it'll help more people live independently in the community up to their potential. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Tyler Sununu with Florida Association of Rehabilitation Facilities. Thank you for being here. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. My name is Tyler Sununu. I'm the President and CEO of the Florida Association of Rehabilitation Facilities. And I also want to thank this committee for hearing the bill and for Leader Grant for bringing this great bill forward. We represent about over 60 agencies across the state that provide services to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And this past few years have been very challenging for them, for staffing, for keeping up with the costs that have been continuing to skyrocket. Of course, we're very thankful for what this body had done a couple years ago to help increase the Medicaid rate to bring up minimum wages. So we do want to be mindful and thankful again of that great support that you've had. This bill is a great bill. We're very thankful for a rate increase again to be put in there. I know the goal is for growing capacity and providers, and we do want to make sure that we continue to work with Leader Grant in this bill to ensure that that goal is achieved by the amount of the rate increase. So, as was stated about, you know, a rate study or a survey that was done, we did conduct a survey with the ARC of Florida and our members and found that only 93% of our providers were not breaking even with the Medicaid rate. And in this industry, we don't have another payer type to help the shortfall. Our providers are very industrious and work hard to keep their doors open and have thrift shops, they have fundraisers, and they find innovative ways, which is why you haven't seen mass closures across the state. But we do want to make sure that if there's a way that would be helpful for them to be able to actually continue to exist and hopefully grow. So I thank you again for bringing this great bill and for what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Joanne Hart with the Florida Dental Association. And Ms. Hart, I see we have info only, but since we are considering a bill, if you wouldn't mind letting us know if you support or oppose, we'd appreciate it as well.
Thank you, Chair Tuck and Vice Chair Lopez and committee members. I want to first start by thanking Leader Grant for this bill. I do want to just point out as information that this bill does touch some important areas in dentistry. It expands the student loan dental repayment program that will allow now for dental hygienists to be a part of that, as well as the funding, so we definitely appreciate that. It also expands looking at volunteer hours, and as many of you all know, the Florida Dental Association Foundation puts on a two-day free dental clinic event around the state, and this is something that is our premier philanthropic program where folks come no matter what your economic status and get free dental care, so we thank you for that. It also expands training opportunities for dental students and dental hygiene students, where, as before, there were some limitations on where they could be trained. And as many of you all know, that some of these schools that end up closing in the middle of someone's training, they have nowhere else to go. And the bill will contemplate adding settings such as federally qualified health centers as those opportunities for training for dentists and dental hygienists. We think this is important because you'll get direct care in those communities from these folks that hopefully will choose to be in those areas. The other thing I think is really big is that the bill recommends an increase of $35 million to Medicaid dental fees. The Medicaid program for dental has not seen a fee increase since 2011. And so if we're looking to incentivize more providers to participate in these public health programs, it is imperative that we also make sure that they are able to recruit, retain, and compensate their staff, as well as manage their office and provide for overhead. There are some areas of concerns that we have met with Leader Grant with, and we look forward to continuing working with Leader Grant on making sure that this bill is focused on looking at those areas where we definitely need increase in access to dental care. Thank you.
Next up, we have Deborah Foote with the Florida Psychological Association.
Good morning, Chair Tuck, members of the committee. I'm Deborah Foote, and I'm the Executive Director of the Florida Psychological Association. My testimony is really specific to Section 19, which begins on page 66 of the original bill. But first, I'd like to thank the Senate President and her staff for all their time and energy put into this bill, as well as Leaders Grant sponsorship of this massive piece of legislation. When Senator Pasadomo asked for ideas to improve the healthcare workforce, the Florida Psychological Association proposed removing the 3-year post-licensure experience requirement of psychologists to participate in the Baker Act. This requirement has been a barrier to Baker Act facilities hiring psychologists. The language before you today actually splits the 3-year requirement between Baker Act functions. It does remove the requirement when a psychologist is completing a petition for involuntary examination, which is requesting that law enforcement transport an individual to a Baker Act receiving facility. Our psychologists certainly appreciate being able to fully serve their patients upon licensure. But later in the bill, it keeps the experience requirement for psychologists when certifying, once the person is at the receiving facility, that the person receive involuntary treatment and who can certify the patient for appropriate release. Psychologists are one of the only 3 types of professionals who can do these functions. Psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners are the other 2. Psychologists must complete 4 years of mental health-specific graduate education, followed by 2 years of clinical experience where they receive hands-on training in diagnosing and treating mental illness. Psychiatrists complete a general course of study in all fields of medicine during their 4 years of medical school and then complete a 4-year residency program in psychiatry. This pre-licensure residency is included in the psychiatrist's 3 years of experience, effectively making them eligible upon licensure. whereas psychologists are required to have 3 additional years of post-licensure experience. Our informal survey of other states' requirements for implementing similar provisions show no other state has additional requirements upon licensure. Keeping the 3-year post-licensure requirement retains an arbitrary experience requirement and does not acknowledge the focused education and clinical experience that licensed psychologists have. Retaining the 3-year experience requirement restricts the ability of receiving facilities to hire psychologists. A newly licensed psychologist will make a career path decision, and changing directions after 3 years is highly unlikely. I want to just share with you a specific case. The chair of our legislative committee, a native of Florida, did much of her training in this specific field in Pennsylvania. Upon licensure, she wanted to return to Florida, continuing to do this work in Baker Act facilities. She had a number of applications that went out. She was an excellent, excellent candidate, and she heard nothing. And that's because there was the 3-year requirement post-licensure, 3 years experience post-licensure. Ending the post-licensure requirement for retaining it in these circumstances will result in no change to the workforce, which is why this bill has been presented. Facilities will only hire psychologists when they are fully able to practice at the top of their license and perform all the authorized duties under the Baker Act. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Melanie Brown Wolfter with the Florida Council for Behavioral Healthcare. Thank you for being here. Karen Murillo with AARP. Thank you for being here. Kevin Comer with the Association of Dental Support Organizations. Thank you for being here. And then Bob Harris with ADT ALME. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Madam Chair, Leader Grant. My name is Bob Harris, and over the past 25 years, I've had the honor and privilege of representing 5 of the largest foreign medical schools in the world, and they send many of their students here for clinicals. I'm just going to talk about one provision in this bill, and that provision says that the Department of Health will have the authority to adopt rules to prohibit the payment of fees to hospitals for clinicals. That's what our schools do in order to get students into Florida. Many of those students are Florida residents. We encourage and want our students to come to Florida, and many of them do. They come here for clinicals, they come here for residencies, and they stay in Florida, which is exactly what the Live Healthy bills are intended to do. But this provision will have the opposite effect. It basically will say that our students will not be able to come into and do clinicals in Florida, and they'll go somewhere else. And we have clinical arrangements in New York and California and other states. We want those students to come to Florida. And so this one provision would it's counterintuitive to really what the intent of the bill is. We do have some alternative language. I know the Senate has put some additional language on this one particular provision in the bill. We're working on that. We have some other alternative language we'd like the committee to consider down the road. But again, Madam Chair, thank you for doing this bill. It's an incredible step forward for Florida, but we'd like to have changed that one provision, and we'll talk about that. But thank you for the time today.
Thank you for being here. All right, seeing no more public testimony, members, we are in debate. Any wishing to debate? Ranking Member Costello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Leader Grant, thank you. This bill is it's probably one of the larger bills since I've been up here. It's quite exclusive. But it just goes to show you that, when we work together, I mean, it's a lot of give and take in this bill, but it's not perfect. But it does more good than it does bad. And I thank you for taking the lead on this and bringing it forward and moving it through to committees here in the House. I'm looking forward to, I understand that the Senate bill is just a little bit different. It's a little more expensive. But hopefully that when they get to the blending process of the bills that we come up with a number that we can all work with. I would like to say that at some particular time, maybe next session, that we can probably talk about expanding our Medicaid programs here in Florida. That would cover a lot of this, what we're talking about here today. So I hope we'd be able to keep that in mind and maybe get it on agenda at some point. But as of today, this is a great, great start, and I applaud you for bringing it forward. Thank you, Lita.
Additional debate, members? Representative Williams, recognized.
Thank you very much. Rep. Quinn, I appreciate the conversation we had on last evening about the bill itself. At this point, I think Medicaid expansion would have saved Floridian $200 million per year. So I would like to continue to have that conversation and see if something that we can work around. I'll be up on the bill today, but I would like to continue to have a conversation. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Additional debate? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Leader Grant, for your open door policy. Really appreciate that very much. A lot of good things in this bill. I feel like it's almost like a reverse train. A lot of stuff in here. A lot of members' bills even are a part of this that a lot of folks have been working on for a while. So looking forward to any kind of changes that are made and the final iteration. Really appreciate your leadership in particular on this issue. I think that you elevate the status of this bill for our chamber, and I appreciate that you have taken this on, and I look forward to working with you on some of those tweaks that I think might be necessary. And I will agree with my colleagues that, of course, Medicaid expansion would be helpful.
Additional debate? Seeing none, Representative Grant, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. Representative Costello, your definition of little and mine are probably different, but I'm sure that gap will be narrowed as this bill goes forward. This is the first stop in the House for this 315-page bill. Staff has done a great job of putting this together, and thank you for that, and working with me to get it to the point that it is today. There will be changes. Obviously, there's going to be changes. And I look forward to working with each one of you and other members of the House to facilitate those changes if they result in good public policy and better patient care. That's what I am here for, and I think that's what most of you are here for. My door will be open to those interests outside this building who have tweaks, who have things that they believe is not going to result in what we all want is good patient care. So I am willing to entertain those language changes as we go forward. And I just want everybody to know that my door is open. I met with a bunch of people yesterday, and I'll continue to do that until we get a final product on the floor. So with that, appreciate your all being here early in the morning and ask for your support on this good bill.
Thank you, Representative Grant. Having closed, Judeline, please call the roll on HB 1549 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez. Andrade?
Yes.
Borrero?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez-J?
Yes.
Lopez-V?
Yes.
Rayner? Rizzo? Silvers? Steele? Tremont?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore?
Yes.
Chair Tuck?
Yes.
11 yeas and 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Please show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you again, members. Appreciate it.
Members, next up we have PCB SHI 24-01 by Representative Andrade. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. And for context, this bill is 1/45th the size of the prior bill. As you're aware, House Bill 1549 requires Florida to join the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, the Audiology and Speech-Language Pathology Interstate Compact, and the Physical Therapy Licensure Compact. Each compact does require certain meetings and associated records to be closed to the public. To effect that change and come in compliance with those compacts, this bill provides certain public records exemptions for public meetings that take up any issues with physician discipline that are required to be kept confidential and prevents personal identifying information of applicants other than their name, licensure status, or licensure number to be disclosed.
Representative Andrade, having explained the bill, members, are there questions? Seeing no questions, we have no public testimony, no amendments, and we are in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Andrade, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Representative Andrade, having waved close, Udaline, please call the roll and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez? Andrade?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gonzalez Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez J?
Yes.
Lopez V?
Yes.
Rayner? Rizzo? Silvers? Steele? Tremont?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Ex officio Skidmore?
Yes.
Chair Tuck?
Yes.
11 yeas and 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Please show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations. And ladies and gentlemen, if you bet on the time for this meeting, I hope you took the under. Seeing no further business before the committee, Vice Chair Lopez, move we rise. Without objection, meeting adjourned.